welcome back to the Golf Industry Podcast. We are here for episode 4 and excited with what we've done so far, talking to a little bit of golf course and operations people, a little bit from the apparel side of things, the NGCOA, and my partner Kyle in the podcast here will kind of kick us off with who we have this week.
Yeah, we're excited to bring to you today Greg Nathan from the National Golf Foundation. They literally are the foundation of our game. They sort of represent and impact all aspects and verticals of our industry. And we thought it'd be good to bring them on. If you've been following along, they've done an excellent job during this whole COVID pandemic thing of publishing data, surveying courses, monitoring retail outlets. And we're going to dive sort of deep into that. But I thought first, Greg, we'd ask you, for listeners who may not be familiar with the NGF, just sort of take us through the history, the genesis story, and how you guys serve the game.
Thanks so much, Kyle and Rob. Great to be on with you guys. Good to see your faces on the Zoom. It's a whole new world. But I guess I'll start by saying I'm one of the luckiest people on earth. You know, when I was in my 20s, I figured out that I knew I wanted to work in golf, perhaps like the two of you. And if you had asked me then what I wanted to do, I would have said, you know, I want to work with the senior leadership of golf companies. I want to know them. I want them to know me because I do something of value for them. And so 13 years ago, I started at the NGF. After 7 years working for Golf Magazine and Golf.com in New York City, and made the trip down to South Florida to Jupiter, the golf capital of the world, as you would say right now, especially with last weekend's Seminole event, which is about 6 miles from our office. But the NGF, you know, I'm so fortunate to work for an organization founded in 1936 by Herb and Joe Graffis, two journalists from Chicago. Herb was the first journalist ever inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame, 1977. And those guys had a vision back, you know, in the late 20s and 1930s that golf was going to be big business in America. At that time, golf was almost exclusively a private game. You know, think about the Gilded Age, that Gilded Age time. But they could see where golf was going to be part of the American dream. And unlike a lot of folks who might have visions, they actually set out to make it so. And they published the first national magazines dedicated to golf. So the first one was called Golfdom, and that was published for every golf pro, greenskeeper, and general manager, club manager at that time, I think 1927. And then in 1933, they published a magazine called Golfing, which was the first national publication for golfers to help them enjoy the game. One of the first jobs the NGF did coming out of the Depression was equipment companies didn't know who was still there after the Great Depression, where they could sell their clubs and balls. So the NGF, as its first job, created the first database of every golf course in America. So fast forward 84 years, and that's still one of the core things that we did. What we're best known for is being the independent objective reporter on the vital signs of the golf business. And we also believe in sort of how can we create a smarter and more energized golf business. So one of the most unique things about the NGF is that we're the only organization that works with every vertical. So unlike some of the other organizations, associations that have their particular narrow bailiwick, we're the organization for business. So I have the good fortune of working with a range of everything from the CEOs of TaylorMade, Callaway, PGA Tour Superstore, companies pretty significant in the golf business, to working with individual golf pros, owners, superintendents at golf courses. And because we work so closely with the leadership and the companies in every vertical, if you combine the private work that we do for those leading companies with our study of golfers, both the supply and demand sides of the golf economy, it gives us a pretty holistic view of the business and how everything is interacting. And so I think that's one of the great values we provide to our members and our clients, is providing that total 360 degree perspective, and knowing what's going on in different areas so that we can apply it to individual golf businesses. So in closing, I'll say that, you know, there's our most visible work is what we do for the many, you know, what we do for the industry. But there's an entire other side of our business, which I would characterize as what we do for the one. So we work with a lot of golf's leading companies and executive teams to help them with private research, marketing work, consumer insight, just help them be smarter and help them make more money. So as I said, once again, I'm really lucky to do this, and I love what I do, and happy to be here with you guys and answer your questions and have a good conversation.
Thanks. I didn't realize that you guys had started. I mean, you basically, the founders kicked off a business right before the Great Depression began. So pretty interesting time to have started business. I imagine for them, pretty scary at that time too. But I find it really interesting that now we sit in a time like we are now. It almost is like a full circle type thing for the NGF to be now back reporting in a time where, I don't know the latest unemployment figures, but I think it's basically like a quarter to a third of the employable people in the United States are reported unemployed right now. There's been, over the course of the last 6 to 8 weeks, just a lot of uncertainty, I imagine, in every industry, but the one we're in particular, it's come down to, at least for us at Gallus Golf, what courses are open, what states have courses open, what are we looking at? And you guys have done such a great job reporting on that. So when you were talking about the information that the NGF began providing during the Great Depression for the industry, it's interesting that we're kind of right back in that role right now. Maybe you can share with us a little bit for those who have not been following along as closely as Kyle and I have, and obviously as you guys have. What have you guys been providing? What insights, what information, what reporting? How deep do you guys dig to get the information that you're getting across all of these industries, from retail to a little bit of everything golf related, in a time that I think, surprisingly, in a tough economy, we've seen a pretty high demand for different portions of our industry?
Absolutely, Rob. So I think that on the association side, on the NGF as a trade association side, we've always done what the industry needed at a given time. And that's been different throughout our 84-year history. But we recognized with the pandemic that there were going to be particular things that we thought that the businesses operating in golf needed. And number one is, what's going on at golf's front door? You know, Herb Graff, as I mentioned, one of our founders, we repeat this quote all the time, that it's from the recreational golfer, from whom all blessings flow. And so we have to figure out what's going on the ground. And so the first thing we did was we maintain the database of every golf course in the world. We focused on the United States, and we created a short survey, and we started calling golf courses. And with a pretty short survey, finding out, well, are you open? And at the beginning, what we were finding out was, if you are closed, is it because you're doing it out of the safety of your employees, which is totally understandable, or were you doing it because of a government regulation? So that's how it all started. And at this point, let's say 5-6 weeks in, we've spoken with somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 U.S. golf facilities out of the 14,500 or so. So you would understand that the sample size that we've been speaking with is very significant. And so we've published along the way the percent of golf courses that were open and updating it just about every single week. And right now we're up to 95% of golf courses in the U.S. being open. the first week that we published this, let's say 6 weeks ago, it was just less than half. It was about 47%. And that shocked some people that, you know, even as fear and, you know, concerns over the pandemic were really heightened, that we almost had 50% of golf courses open. But what I think maybe folks overlook is that a lot of the businesses that operate are based in the urban areas. And so we know what we see, but there's such a significant percentage of golf courses that are not in urban areas, who are not so clearly touched by the pandemic, who remained open. Just for example, if you looked at the state of Iowa, and we've done this, where you plot where the golf courses are in the state of Iowa, it is almost a perfect distribution of coverage, like dots equally spaced around the state of Iowa, because every farm town basically built a golf course in the middle of the 20th century. I can't speak to the situation with COVID in Iowa, but I'm just using that to illustrate what the situation was. Now, in addition to looking at and surveying the golf courses to know who was open, of course, the rounds that were happening at those courses that were open, they're not your typical round. And golf has been pretty good about operating with great safety of golfers in mind. You've seen plenty of things out there about the different best practices that are being followed. But those rounds are not normal, as I said. People are not, they haven't been going into the pro shops and making purchases. They're not spending much time in the clubhouses, which is intelligent for safety, not eating, not 19th hole activity. So from a financial standpoint, it hasn't been so wonderful for the golf courses. But hey, we have a lot to be thankful for relative to the intrinsic values of golf and the way it's played, and that it is so perfectly suited for this type of environment. So we're in pretty good shape with 50 states golf being open currently, 95% of courses open. Yesterday, we just reported on retail, off-course golf specialty retail I'm talking about, and we're close to 3/4 of golf retail stores being open. But there's still concerns. We also are surveying consumers about how they feel about what they might be spending money on and how their level of concern about being in places like retail stores. And it's still a barrier. We're not fine. This situation is still going to curtail traditional spending and traditional activity. But that being said, I think we're one of the luckiest industries in sports relative to golf is being played. And that means there is some purchase activity that's going to happen. Certainly, we've been hearing, and this is anecdotal, we don't have pure data on this yet, but we know that golf courses are pretty busy, that tee sheets are busy, that in many cases, busier than normal, because the limitations on other activities, driving people to golf who maybe haven't played in a while, getting their families involved, people who maybe played are lapsed golfers who are returning to the game, and that's all wonderful, and it's celebrating the intrinsic values of golf. You know, people get hung up on the image of the game, which of course is naturally colored by what they see on the PGA Tour. You know, perfectly manicured courses, often private courses, incredibly well-dressed pro golfers who are out there. It just gives the feeling to many folks in the viewing audience of over 100 million people who consume golf, from a media standpoint, thinking that that's what all golf is like. And it's not. Golf is truly a democratic game. People of all walks of life playing in all different kinds of places. So, you know, golf is uniquely positioned. And I think this might have some really nice effects on the image of the game that I was referring to earlier, not being all about the trappings of golf. That it's really about exercise, being out in nature, being with people, and being able to do it, being able to do it safely. And it's a great game. It's been around for 400 plus years, and clearly the pandemic isn't killing golf. In fact, it's been, I think it's the end of the day, it's going to be good for the game.
Yeah, it's a storied sort of history that we're kind of writing a new chapter in as we think about getting back to normal. As you've surveyed the courses, has there been indications of what golf may look like at the end of the summer versus, you know, a year from now, and when things may get back to normal?
You know, I think, Kyle, your guess is as good as mine. The being able to predict what's going to happen as the society opens up, that the quarantines are eased, that the government restrictions on people being out and about are eased. We just don't know what's going to happen and whether we're going to have some spikes that are significant enough to create a setback. But we do feel that golf is well positioned. And if people are outdoors and need recreation, that golf is going to be one of the few places that people go. As it relates to the whatever the new normal is, you know, I'm not really going to speculate on it. I do know from our research that the golfers who we've surveyed, there's still definitely some concerns at different levels of people being out. And I would expect that if things go in the direction that they are, that, you know, hopefully in the next couple of months, we'll have more of a sense of normalcy in life, let alone at the golf courses.
Yeah. I've personally enjoyed one of the unexpected side effects is the return of walking golf. Yeah. It's certainly not imposed at all courses, but I think the courses around here where I play, it's kind of encouraged. If not, at least you're given the opportunity when before you used to be forced to ride in a cart. And it goes back to that recreational exercise, enjoying the outdoors. I've always enjoyed walking more than riding.
It's pretty easy to say from flat Florida, come to San Diego and drag my fat butt around a golf course with all the hills and canyons out here. And it's a little different, but yeah, I agree. Walking has come back. I've got sore back and legs to show for it right now.
It's a nice look. It's a nice look for golf, mm-hmm. emphasizing the exercise aspects of it. Even if you only play 9 holes carrying your bag instead of 18 in a golf car. And there's been quite a bit of activity that we've noticed relative to, you'd be hard pressed to find a pull cart, to purchase out there in the marketplace.
Yeah.
So this return to walking, as you said, I can only support what you're saying of how great it is to see, and it's good for the image of the game, and it's good for the people who are walking.
So Greg, NGF, serving businesses within all verticals of the golf industry. As an example to lead into a question I have for you, at Gallus Golf, I don't think it's any secret that, you know, I've got a sales team here that I'm overseeing, that we are contacting golf courses, and we lean on the NGF for a variety of data to use in our business. One is quarterly updated lists of kind of the who's who in among golf courses, who we need to contact, who my guys need to be talking to. As this whole pandemic has unfolded, as we've talked about, some of the information about, you know, there were states that just weren't open. No point in my sales team, you know, trying to reach out to those people because they may have been dealing with furloughs, layoffs, whatever the situations may have been. So we've used some of that data to kind of maintain our position in the industry as it goes on. For a smart business leader, I don't know that I'll put myself in that category like I just did in utilizing the NGF for other things. But for a smart business leader, what's the NGF recommend in digging in, manipulating the information that you guys provide to work within their industry? You know, what are some successes you've seen? How do you work with business leaders from that aspect to get the most out of their involvement with you guys?
I appreciate the question, Rob. You know, it's in NGF's DNA to do research. You know, that is the cornerstone of our business. And as it relates to helping the business leaders, the ones that we work with and the ones that we haven't worked with yet, I don't think there's anything more powerful than really understanding, have a deep understanding of your customers and your prospects. So I'd say that in that bucket is one of the highest and best uses of the National Golf Foundation. So the same way that we go out and we study the supply and demand sides of the golf economy for the benefit of every company, every golf course operating in the industry, we do love helping individual companies study their customers and prospects. What do the key decision makers that the success of their business depends on, what do they think of this particular brand and their products? And are they perceived as the innovator? Are they perceived as the leader? What are they known for? What are the equities that they've built up in the consumer's head? And in some cases, we divide the industry up into two hemispheres. So there's the one that everyone would understand, which is B2C, you know, any company whose end user is a golfer. But half of our business is in helping companies, I mean, like Gallus, really, where in many ways your end customer is a golf course. Correct. And helping them run a better business. And so we do this type of work in both hemispheres. So for a Toro or a Jacobson or a John Deere or a Club Car, for example, we might study, we might survey superintendents or golf pros or general managers because they are, or owners, because they're the decision makers for those companies who operate in the B to F space. And because of our relationship with golf courses and with these people, and people who've stewarded the NGF brand over time, you know, we've been pretty successful in that and providing data and insight to the business leaders who, you know, their understanding of their customers and prospects is going to have a great deal to do with their level of success. Now, sure. So that's on the research front. We also, over the past 10 years, have much more heavily gotten into helping companies sell things. So the fastest growing part of the NGF's business is actually in very data-driven email marketing. So we work with a number of the biggest brands in golf, both on the B2F side and the B2C side, but the B2C side has really grown. And you would understand that as a data company, we'd have some different data sets that we can apply to helping companies increase the ROI of their marketing. So just to use one company as an example. So PXG, mm-hmm. out in Scottsdale, Bob Parsons' equipment company, very high end. You know, they recognized that during COVID, that they might have an opportunity here where they might be able to provide their, you may have seen the advertising that they're doing, offering the pricing that they give to heroes, mm-hmm. Veterans, for example, offering that pricing during this COVID period. And so they're one of many clients of our email marketing to our customer list. We've grown our list of golfer emails up to about 1.6 million.
Wow.
And so we help a lot of companies finding their specific target audience in that 1.6 million and helping them sell product. And so while COVID has been very difficult, very hard on a lot of B2C companies, like a lot of historical business experience would dictate, often it's those who are more aggressive during downtimes like this who come out on the other side, maybe in a little bit of a better position. But we don't blame anybody for turning off the faucet. You've got to be very, you got to protect your employees first. And we know that a lot of companies have had to do pay cuts and layoffs and furloughs. And, it's very difficult during this time to be spending a lot of money on marketing when you're doing layoffs. But at the same time, how are you going to support your business and do everything you can to keep your people employed if you're not selling product? So that's the great catch 22. And we invested very heavily in that business so that during times like these, we would be in a position to help golf companies be more successful. And at the end of the day, that's what we're about, is helping golf companies be more successful, whether it's through our industry research or one-on-one engagements. And it's a terrific position to be in, sort of at the center of the wheel, at the hub of the wheel of the golf business. And I'm lucky and enjoy doing what I do every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think if ever there was a time to lean on data to make decisions about how to run your business, it's a time like this where we working with golf courses primarily at Gallus, we're seeing a lot of shift that we're working with courses. The tee sheet's no problem, the tee sheet's full, but some of the forgotten verticals within that golf course business are struggling right now. Some of the social events portions of the business, weddings, different parties, that, golf courses had a lot of their revenue driven from. The F&B vertical in the business has been challenged to how do we continue to maintain that. Private clubs, I know, are dealing with how do we continue to maintain that monthly spend on F&B when we can't even open a restaurant or a bar or anything right now. So there have been some challenges outside of the tee sheet for sure. So as you mentioned, leaning on data right now to really understand your customer is never been more important, to understand, where are the openings, where can we find ways to generate some revenue. So I think you hit on that really pretty well. Kyle, great. Do you have anything?
I really don't. I mean, Greg, you're quite the ambassador for the NGF and the game. I appreciate the passion you bring to this.
Thank you. It might be worth saying that, in this opportunity that golf has and golf courses have to continue to serve customers, that the yellow light is up there. Golf courses are open, and that is a fantastic thing, that the courses are open to do business. But I'd make no mistake about it that the light is yellow, and that if golfers do not abide by CDC guidelines, that they don't handle this gift with great responsibility, that it can be taken away very quickly. And that's really important for everybody. I mean, I don't mean to preach. It's just one of those things that, I think in the Back to Golf video that I saw yesterday, Steph Curry saying that we should be grateful for every swing. And, leave it to me to quote Curry. You got to bring the celebrity into it. Okay. But we should be grateful for every swing. And if we handle it well, that yellow light hopefully becomes green. But we can't take it for granted. And that's really important.
I think that's probably a good place to well part. That was a well said and a good place for us to stop with this. I want to thank you, Greg, for joining us today on this episode number 4 of the Golf Industry Podcast. We are excited to continue this. There'll be some announcements coming out of who our next guests are going to be. So from Jupiter, Florida, the golf capital of whoever, professionals avoiding paying state income tax right now. And the other comment that I have for you, Greg, before we part, is there not enough grays in the beard to be typical.
Where's your COVID beard?
The typical New Yorker that has made his way to Florida, too. I mean, you're appearing a little young for that also.
Well, you're catching me right now. After I just got my first haircut in 2 months. You know, I got it on Monday, and I think I lost a half a pound. You know,
I finally shaved my COVID beard. So,
yeah, but over the course of the last, this working at home experience, I have gone from keeping my beard every day to shaking it up a little bit. Shave it all off on a given day, let it grow. So, yeah, my friend Brad Fellenstein, who works for Golf Magazine and Golf.com, loves to point out the grays in my beard, Rob.
I've got them too.
So. It's vicious.
Very good.
Well, great talking to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
And you bet.
Hope to see you in person. Sometime soon.
Sometime soon for sure. Thanks again.
Yep. See you guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.